This is The Hardline, the greatest show on earth.
Well, maybe just in St. Louis.
Hardline with TJ Moe, Cam Jansen, John Hadley, Bob Ramsey, and who the hell else knows?
Welcome into The Hardline, 59 of the Fan Campiness, 59thefan.com, 104 St. Louis, Missouri, and we are in the midst of a gigantic party. Thank you to a 10-game win streak for your St. Louis Blues. You're listening to Hardline. I am former Missouri wide receiver TJ Mayo, along with the voice of your Slew Bilkins, Bob Ramsey, Matt Rocchio running the board for us today. John Hadley will be here in about 15 minutes. Hey, boys, the Blues have not trailed in a game for 433 minutes. Jordan Binnington during this run is 8-0, has a 1.41 goals against average and a 949 save percentage. I don't know if you've heard of this Vladimir Tarasenko guy, the guy I was saying you should trade earlier this year.
I don't know him.
Let's see. He's the first Blues player with 10-plus goals and 10-plus assists in a 10-game span since Brett Hull. Maybe you heard of that guy.
February 15th to
March 6th, 1992. By the way, the Blues are the second team in NHL history with three straight shutout wins of 3-plus goals. The second team in NHL history to have a road, whatever you just call that, road trip, where they won 3-0 minimally in every game over a three-game span. 4-0, 3-0, 4-0. The Blues are the hottest team in the NHL, and we are now getting into, like, historically hot. It is unbelievable.
One more win, well, it's the hottest streak in the history of the franchise. Yes. And that's saying something.
That's right.
It's a big deal. And it's a big deal in the league. It took a little while because the Blues were so bad, but now people are going, you know what, this isn't a fluke now. Mm-hmm. They can see that it's not a fluke. It's pretty interesting.
It is spectacular. And you dive into, I mean, like the Blues riders, it's pretty funny. If you guys follow Tom Timmerman on Twitter,
I do.
You know,
I've known Tom for a long time. He's hilarious. He's a great follow.
He's always like
really sarcastic.
Yes,
and kind of really, you know, some shots kind of under the radar. You kind of do a double take and go, oh yeah, okay, I got you.
That's right.
Yeah, really good stuff.
And when the Blues were bad, he's like, I'd like to tell you I'm surprised, but another 6 men on the ice penalty. I mean, over and over. It's just like, you know, to the point where you couldn't get it together. And now they are racing to figure out which stats are so extraordinary right now to tweet out. After the game, it is a flood from Jim Thomas and Jeremy Rutherford and Tom Timmerman, all these guys, to get out the craziness that's happened over the last 10 games. You are in that area now.
Right.
You are now in a place where, I'll pull up the standings here for see exactly where they're at, but you are 6 points behind Nashville with 3 games in hand. And they're all in the win column, meaning you have the same losses. So if the Blues went out, you are tied with Nashville. And I think, well, I don't know how they would do. I don't know if they would go head-to-head first. I don't know the NHL tiebreakers. But they've beaten Nashville more than they've lost to them this year. I think it's 3-1.
Well, that passed, a weekend ago. It was it served notice that this wasn't a fluke. Well,
right.
I think that the Florida trip, I mean, it keeps building. Each win is like, not a fluke. Told you it's not a fluke. I mean it. It's not a fluke. And it keeps building that way.
And this is where we were saying earlier this year, how do you go to Winnipeg and win 1-0? How do you go down to Tampa Bay, and this is in the midst of this,
right,
and win 1-0?
Right.
How do you go up to Toronto and win 4-1? The best teams in the league routinely, you go on the road and beat them. How does that keep happening, and then you go home and allow 7 goals?
At the end of the season, the very first tiebreaker is number of games won, excluding games won in the shootout. So essentially ROW column,
okay,
on the standings. And then after that, it's the greatest number of points earned in games between the tied clubs.
So,
and then it's great. And then
right
it's
now,
goal differential.
Right. So it is a higher ROW. What is that?
Which is
so you're tied,
regulation wins.
Yeah. Okay. So right now, Nashville has 33 compared to
the Blues 31. So they would have that. However, three games in hand. Right? So if you win all those out in regulation, you pass them on that as well.
Yeah, and obviously points percentage is obviously what rules until you get to 82%.
Correct.
Obviously.
Right. Yeah, by the end of the year,
but at that point, that first tiebreaker doesn't matter.
Right. So you are in a historic run here with now two goalies playing well. Jake Allen was part of this shutout, and Jake Allen looked good. And it's not just the goalies. Bennington yesterday did exactly what we sort of ripped Jake Allen for doing against Nashville.
Slid out to the
way outside.
He did. I know. I thought of that.
And they came around the other side, and Robbie Fabry, hauling ass on the back check, came back and stopped the goal. Almost identical to what Vince Dunn did in the Nashville game, right? It's Fabry who, look, he's lost a step. And the reason he was so late is because he isn't as fast as he used to be. He's never been the fastest player, but he used to have some quicks, right? His first three...
Well, he's a little guy, and so you knew that speed and quickness and being deft on the ice, those are the things that were making his game. Plus, he was feisty enough for his size.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very feisty. If you remember a couple years ago, the Blues were in a losing streak, and nobody was willing to step up. So he went and took on their bag boy, and he got a freaking lump on the front of his forehead the size of China, right? Like, he is a feisty cat. But he's never been, like, Jaden Schwartz is actually fast. He's quick and fast, right?
Yep.
Fabry was never really fast, but he's pretty quick. And so when you're quick to start out with and you get up to top speed fast, maybe you look pretty fast. By the, you know, maybe everybody catches you on the way down the ice, but you're already there. He's sort of lost a little bit of that. You lose a burst. When you have multiple knee surgeries on the same knee, you lose that burst.
You do.
It's not going to be the same as it was. But look, he filled in for Alexander Steen twice and looked pretty good. It wasn't great. It's not what you hope for. You hope that he'd be a top six forward and he'd be a guy that you'd want to sign to a big contract by the time he got done. That's not who he is today coming off the injury. But he didn't kill you. He was fine in there. And you can go from guy, like man to man. I tried doing this last night. Who's not playing well right now? Like, name me a guy on the roster you're like, he's just really...
We got to get him out of there.
I don't think there is one.
No.
And at different times throughout the year, you thought, man,
almost everybody has been in that category except O'Reilly.
And typically at the same time. So you're like, man, I would love to have Pat Maroon as a healthy scratch, but then, geez, you got three guys that are playing terrible. Should you send Kyrou back down? Robert Thomas isn't going to... I mean, it's like we had this conversation all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're like, yeah, I don't know who you take out when David Perron gets healthy. I don't know. Like, right now it would be Robbie Fabry, right? But then what happens when Steen comes back? Do you take out Zach Sanford, who's been actually playing really well?
As the skipper used to say, I don't have to make that decision now.
And that's what Chris Gerber said the other day.
But, and usually those things take care of themselves. And if you occasionally have a player playing well and has to be a healthy scratch, good for our club.
Yeah.
Good for the organization. That's just the way it works.
No, I think you're right
on that. That's a good thing.
I think you're exactly right on that. Your issue is coming off, this I guess is a concussion for David Perron, and it's taking quite a while here. So I don't know. I mean, it says upper body injury. I hate that. Tell us what the heck is going on.
But I do too.
I think it is a concussion here. And
Perron?
Yeah.
It's concussion.
And when it takes this long, that usually tells you something.
Well, I mean, he's had a history before.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we talk about how it's stupid the NHL keeps these things quiet, but honestly, I can't blame a guy like Perron for wanting another concussion to be kept under wraps, because if it's not, you know, if it's not public information, they can maybe fudge it when, you know, next time he goes through a contract, you know.
No,
it's
you not, can't.
I guess they have all the medical information, don't they? So I don't get why you hold it back, because the public, why does it, if a team's going to know everything that happened to you,
correct,
why hold it back from the public that it's concussion?
Well, you would.
I don't get the line.
Theoretically, especially because fantasy hockey is not really a thing.
I mean, it's a thing, but
you know what I'm saying. It's not like the public is not demanding. Like if you try pulling that crap with football, good luck. Right? It's you have to specify the injury.
My question is: did football hold back? You know, did football hold back a lot more in the '90s and stuff before fantasy
football
became a thing?
Maybe not. My point is, you can never go to this of that, right?
But yeah, but I just wonder why in hockey, and I get, you know, people saying you don't want them to know that you got a bad wrist, because then they're gonna check you a little harder there and try to, you know, take advantage of that.
Yeah.
When it comes to concussion, either you're I can't imagine guy. I guess your fear is guys are gonna take advantage of that, but like that's. Man, you must have a low opinion of some people around the league.
And there may be, and this may be more excuse than anything, there may be HIPAA law
issues as well of what you can what
There's
you
not.
Can actually make public.
There's not, or else you couldn't do it in the other leagues.
Well, they've already I don't know, but their rules, you know, are a little
this
bit different.
This has nothing to do with HIPAA.
Okay,
but
for
sure.
Bottom line is, it's definitely a concussion.
Yeah,
like, there's no doubt. At this point.
There's no way across the leagues you could, you know, I mean, maybe if we were in another country, you'd look at some, but I mean, they don't have HIPAA in another country. They have their version of whatever.
Right.
But there's no way the NBA could say he has an eye laceration, and in hockey, you can only say he has an upper body injury.
Well, like I said, I was just trying to think of excuses as why they may do that. You know, we know with football, it's because of betting. That's the only reason. It's because of betting. But the other sports, I don't know. It is curious as to why they are so secretive about it. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, we got a text, you know, Big Mike says, Steele will be back Tuesday per the Blues. You should know why hockey teams only say upper and lower body injury. Ask Cam or Andy. And mostly the response I've gotten in the past has been, you keep it under wraps so that way teams just don't know about it. That's crazy.
What do you mean, ask Cam or Andy? I did a show with Cam for 2 years.
Yeah, we talked about this multiple
times. Cam's annoyed by it, too.
Yeah. Tell us what's wrong.
Right. That's the whole. There is no real good reason except for what Rock's talking about, a competitive advantage. That is.
Yeah, and I guess people are extending to it. I think there's just a difference between knowing that a guy maybe, you know, maybe a guy's knee's sore and maybe checking him a little harder and then when a guy has concussion issues and being like, I can take advantage of that. I just feel like there's a line between those two things that I guess maybe they think people aren't going to respect. But that's just the way I think about it. It's kind of crazy to me to think a guy would take advantage of the fact that a guy has concussion issues. It's a crazy thought process to me.
Maybe with concussions, you could be right on that. I would say with a...
I understand with a bad wrist or a bum ankle. I understand that a little bit more.
I think today you're more right than you used to be, but I would still not put it past guys. Here's the other thing.
You might screw up a guy's season by taking advantage of a bad ankle. You're talking about screwing up a guy's livelihood 30 years down the road by taking advantage of the fact that he has concussion issues.
Yeah, but remember, we're in a sport where it's like two tough guys square up and try to
knock
each
other
out.
That's true, but yeah, that's true.
But I don't think you're totally wrong with the thought. I think today, with what we know about concussions, you would be less likely to do that you were in the past. If I knew you had a concussion, I'd try to crush you.
But if it's all about keeping the information just away from other teams in the moments, then I understand that it's just par for the course.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on.
Yes.
So, 855-282-8255.
We rabbit-holed that topic.
Yeah, we did.
It
we went way down there. While we're on the Blues, I have two that fit into this category. I'm calling it whiny, bitchy, self-important talk show host.
I feel good about this.
It also goes into self-loathing because I hate whiny, bitchy, self-important talk show host. So I'm going to do it, but I'm going to hate myself for doing it.
Okay.
And fully expect pile on.
We've been there
from listeners.
I've been there before.
Yeah. Okay.
Your thoughts are welcome.
And it goes to the Blues, and it is there's two things. One that's a little more analysis. And I'll get to that. And then the reaction to the Blues. The fans, and more importantly, fans are fans. That's okay. I get it. But fans and media who, see, I told you, you were trying to trade everybody. Well, yeah, because they were garbage.
Yep.
They were absolute garbage. And it's not an opinion. There were the facts.
Yes.
I saw them in the standings every day. I read the box scores every day, and I saw the standings. And they were garbage. I said, again, this is self-important, but I also understand who we are and where we are. I said it as I fell down in the forest.
Okay.
Meaning tree falls in the forest. Yeah. So as I fell in the forest, I said, I usually wait till Christmas. Well, January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, whatever it was.
They were in last place.
They were in last. Last butt-ass place.
Yes.
They were, and it was bad. And it didn't appear to be getting any better. Then, now, we go back into December. There was that fight at practice. Some people think that may have had, and it may. Those are those sort of ethereal things that may have had an impact, may not. It's almost not provable.
If so, it was a 2-week delay.
Oh, yeah. Almost, and more maybe. But maybe that sort of...
I think it was like December 17th.
Yeah.
And then they came around.
Maybe it turned things. I don't know. But my point in, there are two things that happened personnel-wise that have helped create this. One was good fortune. I'm not discrediting anybody, but it was good fortune, and that's Binnington. Nobody can take credit for that. Nobody can take credit for that. Nobody saw it coming. No media member, no suit in the organization, no fans. Nobody saw it coming. But to win, almost always, you have to have some good fortune. Some things that you didn't expect to happen good for you. That is typical of a high-achieving team. The second thing is, and this is the self-loathing, but also pat on the back, egotistical radio guy. All right. Nobody's saying, and everybody's missing it. And I mentioned it the day it happened because I didn't see it coming. And it turned out to be the brilliant move of the year by Craig Berube, and that is moving Braden Schenn to left wing. It absolutely is the key factor outside of Bennington why this team is winning. I didn't see it coming. Nobody, and this is what makes I used to be, I wouldn't even say an insider, but I used to cover the Blues every day in the 80s through the mid-90s. I'm not that guy anymore. I get it. Hockey people don't like outsiders opining about their sport. I get that, too.
That's a fact.
But none of the guys who I consider all of them friends, so I'm not saying it to hurt any feelings or anything like that. None of you saw it coming. Nobody saw it coming. And who knows? Berube might have said, I got to take a shot here, or it might have been brilliant. Now, wait a minute. Before you go, Rock, I might get ahead of you here. I did talk to people in the game that I do respect. And when I mentioned, boy, I didn't see it. Well, you know, he played wing in Philly. Well, how come nobody made a suggestion of that then prior to Craig doing it? How come nobody mentioned it? I'll tell you why. Because nobody thought of it. Because he was such a good center. He was your best center last year. You gave you two really good centers. Nobody thought of it. This is Craig Berube, and it was a brilliant move, and he deserves all the credit in the world, and nobody else gets to say, I told you so. There, that's me being whiny.
Rah. No, you're right, because it's there. He played left wing. My thing always was is I wondered if the fact that he was very vocal about not wanting to play the wing and wanting to be a center, if that was the reason that we hadn't even heard the conversation about. Because I didn't even bring it up for that reason. I was thinking Berube doesn't want to rock the boat in a locker room that already seems a little bit
disjointed,
shaky.
Yeah, right.
So what he's not going to do is take one of the best players on the team, even though he's not having a great season, and make him do something he has – expressly, I don't want to do this anymore. I like this better. And that's the main reason I didn't even think about it, because I thought it was a fragile thing.
And
I didn't even consider it.
Yeah, and here's the other thing that's brilliant about it. When you look at, and I'm old school in that I like, the perfect line is a sniper, a hands guy, and a power forward. That's, to me, the perfect hockey line. Well, there are no power forwards, basically. And
they got one, and he's playing the third line.
Yeah, Schenn at 6'1", maybe, is playing, and I think he's 6'1", 190, 6'1", 200, something like that. He's playing like a power forward. Now, can he continue that in the grind all the way through to June? Yep, I said June, folks. Can he do that all the way through? I don't know, but it's working right now. Not only working, it's over the moon, top of the charts, fantastic. Other than Bennington, is the move for the Blues this year and Craig Berube. Now, Craig may come out and say, you know, the stick boy was the one that gave me the idea. But Berube's the coach. He's the one that writes down the lineup, so he's got to get credit.
Here is my thoughts on Braden Schenn. The reason we didn't consider moving him to wing is because Tyler Bozak was playing like a third-line centerman, and last year Braden Schenn was
terrific.
The only redeeming quality on the whole team. And you thought, he's really good. And then O'Reilly kind of bumped him back, and you're like, good, you actually have – we've been saying in town for as long as you haven't had it is go look at the great teams inside the league. They are unbelievable up the middle. Nashville. You go look at Pittsburgh, right?
That's
They're so
right.
good right up the middle. Why just take him and move him to the wing? And then move Bozak, who's really a third-line center, up to second line. Then you got to go to Sundqvist, who wins about 40% of his faceoffs. You got to have him as your third-line center. And what are you going to do in the fourth line now? Well, it turns out everything kind of worked itself out because Robert Thomas has figured things out a little bit.
And they're using brilliant lineup maneuvering and having O'Reilly take virtually every faceoff.
It is unbelievable.
To cover up what you're just talking
That's
about.
That's right.
And Berube deserves all the credit in the world. It's just been amazing, and he deserves credit
not just, hey, they're winning, so he should be the coach, but it's got to go deeper than that. And that move was, he can hang his hat on that as far as I'm concerned. It was really, really good. And so I'm a little annoyed. See, you were trying to trade guys. Well, yeah, you should have been looking for it. They sucked.
Yes.
Now they don't suck.
By the way.
Now, so it changed. And when things change and you have more information, you alter your position. You know, that's called using your brain. Now, the thing with Shen and what Rock was talking about with a guy not wanting to do it, but then they made the move anyway, that's going to tie into later in the show. I'm giving you a little, we'll do a callback on this later in the show with the Cardinals.
So
there's a tease.
So
tease.
I am, as I'm sitting here, I'm looking up some of the statistics. As a team, they're winning nearly 52% of the faceoffs, and it's largely what you're talking about.
O'Reilly.
You got one dude who's winning 57.7% on, 1,200 and something. He's won 780 and lost 571 this year, right? The next closest that you have is about 663, and that is Braden Shen. Shen, by the way, you were often chasing, winning about 47%. So you moved a guy where you were often chasing, moved into the wing on a line that is never chasing because Ryan O'Reilly wins, and then you move Tyler Bozak, who's winning 54.7%, to the second line, and now they're not chasing anymore either. You fixed a lot of problems.
You really did. And that's where all those things keep going into Berube deserving credit.
Sundqvist, by the way, 43%, and he's taken quite a few. And
I heard somebody on one station today, and I don't know where it was. I flip around. I listen to the radio all day driving around. Talked about, you know, and it goes to what you were pointing out earlier about getting healthier. Let's say Perron does come back. You know, you pray that this is not a Mike Matheny thing that essentially ends a career. Concussions can do that.
Oh, yeah.
So we pray that that's not the case. Let's say he's back in a reasonable amount of time, say before the end of this month. You say, well, who do you take out of the lineup? Well, you'll move somebody off second line, and I think it's probably Bozak. If, here's the capital letters underline, if Thomas continues to grow in and you have it can grow into an NHL role, that would work. Now, if it doesn't, then you got to do some other manipulations. But boy,
Thomas has been right wing though.
Yeah, but he can.
I think he's more comfortable there right now.
We don't have enough data to say. What if you put him at center with Perron and Schwartz?
Well, you had him at center earlier in the year, and he's really settled in once he got to the.
But
wing.
He's a kid, and those things evolve as you get more comfortable. I'm not saying they should do it. But if people say, well, gosh, what do? That's one thing you could do if Perron's healthy and if Thomas, because what you need is, because of moving Shen to a wing, ultimately you probably will want another centerman.
Well, here's your other issue, and it's small sample size, like you said, but on 186 faceoffs, he's winning 43%.
Yeah.
So
about like the other guys that aren't named O'Reilly.
Well, Barbashev right now is playing center on your fourth line, and he's winning 48%. So your fourth line's not chasing. That's close enough, right?
And that's, I believe, that's his career high by a couple percentage points because he's never been a plus 50%
so
face-off
guy. So the only
guy.
Line that's chasing right now is Sundqvist because Sundqvist is just, you don't have enough centers now. And what you pointed out with O'Reilly, they will oftentimes throw him out there with whoever, take it, and he skates right off.
That's right.
So you can take care of it.
It's great.
But it's much more difficult to be playing that all the time, especially when you're home and away and you don't get to throw guys. That is a tough thing.
Something you just mentioned, we got a text about it. This is perfect timing, 314. Thomas will be the second line center shortly. I was just going to say, with the way he's playing on the wing, he looks more confident with the puck. He's turning it over less. He's passing it even better.
I totally agree.
I don't know enough to whether evaluate how he's doing defensively. I know that's a huge part of playing center, but it wouldn't shock me if just him playing better and them trusting him more, we start seeing him get center minutes again.
I would be surprised because of what you're getting out of the other guy. When you get a young guy who feels comfortable and then you start to add him, and he right now, go watch the power plays from yesterday. He is the reason it looks really good, because he skates to the open area, and then they have to crash, and he finds the open man. Routinely, he's the guy that's moving the puck around. I know O'Reilly was the guy that kicked it over to Tarasenko. Who got the puck to O'Reilly? Skater right there, yes, he lost the puck. It was Robert Thomas, right? He's skating to the open area. He's playing tough. He's hard on the puck, and he does a lot of the right stuff. When you're this young and you have enough guys contributing, I wouldn't move him. And I do think, ultimately, he is your center. He is your center. 6 years from now, he's going to be the first-line center. But today?
6 years? I don't buy green bananas. I'm not worried about that.
I'm telling you.
I'm just,
you have enough guys.
I'm just saying you have to play talent. And you're right. He looks really comfortable. But you also, without hurting the team or hurting his progress, are there ways to expand and challenge a kid? In all sports, it's that way. And now, you may end up being 100% correct, because it is a real legitimate take. He's comfortable. He's not quite ready. But I think on the spectrum of possibilities, this kid's really, chewing up the experience and gaining experience and maturity rapidly. And I think it could be an answer for the club.
Another thing is, because he plays special teams, even on the fourth line here, he's averaging over 12 minutes a game. So he's getting some ice time. That's maybe not – I mean, if he was great this year, he'd be averaging 18, 20, whatever. Ryan O'Reilly's over 20, nearly 21 minutes. But for a guy that looks comfortable, who opens things up, that is a tough thing. And
I'm greedy. I want more.
Are you talking about, talent. Robert Thomas?
Yeah.
He's playing third line, I thought. You said fourth line. I thought he was playing third line.
He is the fourth line with McEachern and Barbashev.
Oh, my bad.
I love talent.
So it's Sanford, Sunquist, and Maroon on the third line.
I love talent. I'm greedy for it. And when I have it, as my partner Earl Austin says, milk it till it moves.
Flip phone Stan, they haven't lost since Perron got injured. Don't fix what isn't broken.
But here's eventually what I think you have.
Directly
to.
Opposite of you, Bob, but hey, you got a laugh out of it.
It was good. That's a good take.
So Fabry's going to be the healthy scratch here. Sure. As soon as Steen gets back, he's going to be a healthy scratch. I think what happens likely is that Perron would either just replace Sanford straight up on the third line and play with Sunquist and Maroon, or he would bump Steen out of the third line and he'd be your second line guy with Schwartz and Bozak. I think that's the most likely case.
I think early, again, I'm just going to add the one caveat. Now we're going around circles, so I'll end it here, and you can have the last word on it. But I think depending on when it happens and how other pieces of the puzzle are working, I think they could move Bozak to three and Thomas up. But you might be right. It might be too soon for that. So there, I'm done.
I agree. I think I agree with everything you said. The one thing, this is a Cam Jansenism.
Okay. Don't hit me.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, then I can't do it. No. It is, lose a faceoff, you're always chasing the game.
Right.
So whatever that looks like, I don't know how you, but again, as you pointed out, they fix that with O'Reilly a lot of the time. Dude's taking double the next closest guy, and it's not because he's out there double the minutes of all the rest of the other guys. He's out there for an extra 10 seconds, and then he skates.
Berube's moves are, to this point, brilliant, and I give him all the credit in the world.
John Hadley, any thoughts on your St. Louis Blues 10-game win streak, have not trailed in a game for 433 minutes?
Well,
welcome to the show, by the way.
Number one, you're 75% right. Rock's 25% right. Because Maroon has spent some time recently on that fourth line.
We weren't talking about Maroon. We were talking about Thomas.
I know. But Thomas has been up on the third.
I got you.
So, anyhow. But you're 75% right. I mean, if you go with the majority, Rock's wrong.
Take that, Rock.
But he's just a little.
Which you enjoyed.
That's why I've never won at Family Feud.
Just a little teeny
good
bit. But, anyhow. I fully admit that I was utterly shocked yesterday, because though I watch enough hockey, Phoenix had not been playing well. Colorado is a team that does not match up with the Blues right now, does not match up well. And besides that, Jake Allen actually made all the saves he needed to make. I mean, if there were a handful of tough saves, and he made them.
Can I jump in on the, I don't know if you heard earlier, this was I had the whiny, bitchy sports guy look at me take, which I hate, so self-loathing's involved as well.
Sure.
The Jake Allen thing.
John knows all about self-loathing, okay?
It's been going for over a year. It started with the Blues organization, and now
the Allen Lemmings, which it's okay, root for whoever you want to root for.
But Allen Lemmings,
but don't
knitting and what?
Sweater knitting and cookie baking.
Yeah, yes. Go ahead.
But don't give me this. See, I told you about Jake. That's my guy. That's my Blues fan guy. He's doing what a backup is supposed to do.
Right.
Play once a week or once every 10 days and be good that day. That, and I want to emphasize this, that's what a backup is supposed to do.
You're
good for him. He's doing what he's supposed to do. I love it.
And there is a, not necessarily sarcasm, but hesitation when you praise a guy by saying he actually made the saves he was supposed to make. You know, so
as if you're surprised.
Yeah. So, I mean, because like I said, I mean, Jake Allen's one of those guys that I sort of get it. It's tough to give up on because you know what's possible. You just rarely see it.
Well, here's my point about Al. This is not personal against him. He's found a niche now, and it's very good, and I'm happy for him, more importantly, because it's good for the team. But last year, the Blues shoved Allen down our throat, and it cost him the playoffs.
I would tend to concur. No question. Now, going into Minnesota, though, and Minnesota had been playing very poorly, but going into Minnesota, considering the proximity in the standings, considering some of the issues that the Blues have had with the Wild, considering that it was on their home ice, considering they had a day of rest while the Blues were playing and traveling, I again just thought to myself, this is the game they're going to lose. This is.
They were due. All the signs were there.
And in actuality, the Blues did come out and play a very pedestrian game. But my God, Minnesota has just basically utterly made a statement that...
Not interested.
Yeah, because you would have thought going into that to support your point that they would be playing like a desperate club.
Exactly.
And they weren't.
Because now what, the Blues, there's like two dozen games left. The Blues are up by like 7 points with two games in hand.
With the
Wild?
Let's see, I have it here.
You're playing at home. Every point's precious. Yeah. A hot team's coming in. We're going to match them, but no.
They have one game in hand. And that, yes, 7 points up, one game in hand.
So, in theory, they're 9 up with a dozen games left. So, you play 500 hockey, Minnesota's going to have a tough time catching you. So, but, like I said, when you win games that you're supposed to win, and you play average hockey and you win.
Good signs.
Great signs. And by the way, not to jinx it, but last week, when I said, I'm not giving up on Nashville, how many points are the Blues behind Nashville right now, TJ?
Six.
And how many games in hand do the Blues have?
Three.
And the Blues also play Nashville, so that's a 4-point game, as we like to say in the world of hockey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question about it.
Along with Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just saying that now that the Blues are not only in a position to work their way into the playoffs, they are now in a position to work their way into a home ice advantage in the playoffs, which means what, Bob? The Blues are about to embark on a 12-game losing streak.
Which is also why this goes back. Man, I can't get off my whiny, bitchy topic. Oh, you want to trade people. Trade deadline's coming. What are you going to do now? Well, if you start losing, you may have to make a deal.
I don't know.
There's no guarantees.
No.
I think the Blues would rather be on the road as they are one game above 500 at home, and they are eight games above 500.
But you got to change that. That's got to change.
How many people,
when
the Blues were down, how many people called this radio station or texted to remain supportive of this team?
Well, Bob, you texted me a few times and said, go Blues. I think that's about all.
Was that me?
No, I mean, I don't think it was. Seriously, from the standpoint of listenership, aside from Hockey Bob, I don't know of anybody.
No, but Hockey Bob's take wasn't that this team is good. It was that you should appreciate losing.
Shut up, TJ. You don't like Hockey Bob, so you never give Hockey Bob credit.
By the way, a quick thing. 13 of their last 16 games have been away, kind of made up for that huge stretch where they had all those home games. Yeah. 13-2-1.
Yep.
Amazing.
That's unbelievable.
Even had you been playing well in October, November, and December, which obviously they weren't, you would have looked at that stretch with trepidation. Man, nobody can survive that. Not only did they survive the schedule, they dominated
the schedule.
And now
it's essentially an equal split between home and road games left.
That's what I was telling someone over at the restaurant. was that the previous week, you had three tough, intense, down-to-the-minute games, two with Nashville, one with Tampa, so with elite teams. Then you have a game at home against New Jersey. Then you play three or four games on the road. Again, there's no reason that the Blues should have had anything left in the tank yesterday. Minnesota had everything to play for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I were in
and
Vegas,
they lost like six in a row against Minnesota
Right.
Yeah.
If I were in Vegas, I'd have laid a couple grand on the Wild yesterday. And I kid you not.
Well,
I think it would have been a reasonable bet.
Right.
That's why we put you on the 1-800, whatever you call that.
So,
bets off. There it is.
Okay.
But I will tell you this much right now. Again, I remember. I remember Walt Jocketty telling me one time how Boston had just about given up, and this was before he became a superstar, how Boston had just about given up on Dustin Pedroia, and that Pedroia was on the market, and that Walt actually gave some consideration to going after him.
Wow.
And then a year later, he said, we're sitting in the same press box and talking. He was talking to the same general manager. And you could not have given up half your team for Pedroia.
Right.
It's just, I mean, so I guarantee, I know for an absolute fact, unequivocally, that Armstrong was looking to make some moves.
Oh, yeah.
It's just things did not come about. So that old saying about sometimes when it comes to success, it's what you don't do as opposed to what you do proves to be the difference. This might be the case with the Blues.
Agreed.
And more than anything, because I was talking to Cam about this, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, Cam, you weren't wrong. Basically, what the Blues are doing right now is proving everything I said at the start of the season. I didn't have the heart to tell Cam that he picked him 12th in the IHL, let alone the NHL. You know, but he was like, no, I'm serious. We're all going around making predictions, and I think Rock picked him middle of the pack, and TJ picked him middle of the pack, and I picked him to win the cup, and Cam, I said, so where do you see him in the division? And I think he said like fifth or something like that.
Yeah.
Before the season.
Before the season, we come
really?
Back. From the, then we come back from the break. He's like, can't believe I just did that.
Can I say this? Dallas here, they are 6-3-1. Out of 20 possible points, they have 13. That's pretty good. You deal with that.
Yeah.
And the Blues have picked up 7 points on them in the last 10 games. I mean, what? Dallas is they're in the first wild card spot. They, against any other team, are holding steady with that third place in the division. And the Blues just cruised right by them like they were standing still.
That's right. Yep.
Let me tell you something. Nashville's not playing well, boys.
No, they're not. They're 5-4-1 in their last 10.
Nashville's. I've watched a load of hockey last week. Like eating chicken strips like I am now.
Got them delivered, though. Denny's. They have chicken strips.
Huh. I didn't know until yesterday morning that you could get Uber to bring you Denny's. A whole new world has opened up for me, Bob.
What are you, 8 years old? Chicken strips?
Have you not heard of Postmates or Uber? True. Have you not heard of Postmates or Uber Eats?
No, here's the funny thing is.
Uber Eats.
So you
had something important to say. Let's get that
Postmates
first.
Came in and Uber was like, wait a second. We already have the cars.
So
right. What the hell are we doing?
There's a rib
Barubi
there's
like, coming
a rib
up with
place
ideas.
I like right up the road here. Great ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Right up the road here on Manchester. If I could remember their name, I'd give them a shout out.
All right.
Anyhow, long or short of it is, I'm in there the other day. Bruce Bochy announces retirement after 2019.
How about that?
So.
You just got a whooping, and that
I'm
was
not
it.
Sure that's the best way to deliver breaking news.
I was trying to get. I wanted to hold on to it for a little bit.
In between chicken strip bites.
I was trying just to hand this to TJ so he could then put it aside until we go to break. This, and John's this, just very quietly not even reading it out to people.
Rock you if you put it on the script, I'm going to read it.
This report.
So anyhow, yes, Bruce Bochy has announced that after the 2019 season.
Go blank yourself, San Diego.
So.
Or San Francisco in this case.
Oh, boy.
The thing is with the St. Louis Blues is I really don't know if they're in a position right now to add much.
No.
So ultimately staying the course is pretty much going to have to be the case. But let me I'll tell you one thing right now, Bob, that I cannot get over. The Tarasenko thing, this whole Tarasenko doesn't remotely surprise me. This is who I thought he was. Going back to when you started with the show and we were joking about his name used to be Bull. He used to do this. He used to do that.
It was Tank. It was different.
He's doing it now. TJ, I swear to God.
I'm coming across the desk.
I swear to God, the ass whooping that you will take, I'm talking about eating from a straw for 3 weeks.
John, 30 now, years ago, I would have taken that seriously.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, because he knew guys then that would do it for him.
That's what I was going to say. Is, but don't think I can't call Cam. Well, now I lost my train of thought. Oh, but the Bouwmeester thing, I just can't get over. I mean, Bouwmeester is a legitimate factor on the ice.
Yes, he is.
He is a legit. This so is here, the best stretch I've ever seen Bouwmeester play in a Blues uniform.
Now, so here's the question. Were the Blues, it's clear, at least that's what the insiders are telling us, that he's now healthy and his hip is healthy. So should they have held him out for a year, or not a year, but held him out till he got healthy? Or was it the right thing to do to have him play when he wasn't fully healed?
Well, everybody was injured to start the year. Bertuzzo was out, too. Gunnarsson was still recovering.
Well, there's something to be said for stepping up for your team and jumping in there and taking minutes and all. I get that. Give him the Medal of Honor. It's okay. But was it the right thing? But was it the right thing to do for him and the team?
Exactly.
I think it's an open question.
Well, here's probably the answer. I think they all thought what we thought. He's healthy. He just sucks.
Yeah, I think you're probably
right.
So
just roll him out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody was convinced he was any good.
TJ.
I tried to trade him to the AHL.
TJ brilliantly brought up a topic that is my last part of the presentation, and that's when a guy like Robert Bortuzzo is playing like a different player, like he's never played before.
But I've always loved him. They need that toughness.
That tells you that, oh, no. See?
But he's elevated.
He's like pinching in the corners. I mean, he's like, I've never seen Robert Bortuzzo be so aggressive offensively.
Didn't you get written up here at the station for pinching somebody in the corner?
Well, yes, but it's a misunderstanding.
Okay,
it's a misunderstanding.
He ended up liking it anyway.
I was trying to go top shelf, and I didn't. Anyhow,
Bortuzzo. Yeah.
I never went through with the lawsuit.
Okay.
Bortuzzo, though, holy snikes, in particular on this road trip. Numerous times, he jumped up, kept the puck in the zone, which led to some very good possessions. And Saturday, oh my God. It was Saturday. That 90-second possession by the Blues, they didn't score?
Yes.
That might be the greatest single possession I've seen since going back to the days.
It was great.
Of Hawley and Oates. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and I know we're only 20 minutes late for a break, but the other thing about Bortuzzo is I think it had a long lasting effect. Was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Hitchcock refused to give him good minutes and would often make him a healthy scratch when they were desperate for a heavy player, desperate for – and for whatever reason, Hitch didn't, in my view, didn't play him enough, and I think it hurt Hitch.
Well, you're noticing this more and more. Like yesterday, Dunn got into a little bit of a scrap. Who all of a sudden appeared out of nowhere?
Yeah, that was great.
That's right.
I'll tell you this. When he came over, and we'd have to look this up exactly, he was injured right before he came over, and he was injured quite frequently during, and they told us he was healthy, and I doubt he was.
That's good. That's probably right. That's a good point.
A lot of that season because he seems like a Hitch type of player. A guy that, I mean, you know, he fits.
He could be right.
Throwing some bodies around. I think he was hurt most of that year. And I love him too. I think he and Edmondson are the only defensemen on this team that should ever throw hands. The only ones. And I like that Bertuzzo is looking to see who he can do it with now.
What is that martial art you're doing, Cro-Magnon?
Krav Maga.
Ah.
Cro-Magnon's good too.
Same thing.
Performed by Cro-Magnon, I believe.
Yeah. We need to get Pareko to take that with you.
I don't want Pareko punching anybody.
Because you want his offense you don't want to hurt his hands?
I don't care about that. I think he would get crushed.
Not if he trained, though.
If he trained, he's got the attitude with that to reach, get knocked out.
With that reach, though, with he's keeping away from people.
I'll check. I could swear somebody told me, and it might have been Camster, somebody told me that he was actually, I think it was boxing, that Pareko was trying to
but you
his
know,
game.
But you know what he said? But you know what TJ is saying is you got to be willing.
Yes.
You
can
be
have all
willing,
the skills in the world,
but if you're not
get
willing,
knocked out every time you step up there.
Who was the Great White Hope in the early 80s? The lefty, the guy at the left?
Larry Bird.
No, different one. Oh, what's his name? I love watching him fight. And I didn't then until he got his ass.
Oh, whoop. Every time.
Who is that? But, somebody texted him.
It was not
the
text,
great
it wasn't
left hook.
It wasn't text Cobb.
No. This is apparently a legit guy.
Oh, yeah. But he just took a pounding every time.
We're so
you
old,
couldn't
John.
Knock him out. He fought Larry Holmes on a Saturday night. I remember that distinctly.
And got it handed to him.
Yeah, but didn't go down. Didn't go down, Ray.
Exactly.
You didn't put me down, Ray.
Sorry. 60-year-old reference.
I got it. We'll figure that out.
What's that guy's name? Come
Rock.
On.
Rock.
Somebody.
I can't Google this one either because I have no idea. I can't
80s.
Put in Great White Hope
this,
early
this
80s
This old
hockey.
Man, I mean, it's an obvious.
Solomon would have had an answer and a bio printed by now.
Printed. That's the key.
Printer stamped has.
Somebody help
I'll
us.
Only argue at that point because I don't think this computer's hooked up with a printer.
So, he would have got it done, baby.
When we come back, though.
We'll figure it out.
When we come back, I want to give a shout out because I love it when St. Louis does something right. And there was an event downtown in Soulard this weekend. Jerry Corey.
No, that's 70s.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No,
is.
This guy was
60s
a great.
60s and 70s.
Corey was never a great White Hope. They just hoped he would go away.
It wasn't Jerry. it wasn't Jerry Cooney. It wasn't Cooney. It wasn't Corey. There's one other guy, and I can't remember his name.
Hold on. This just in.
No, I just said Jerry Cooney's not here. Holmes whooped Jerry Cooney, too. I saw that down at the old arena. Remember when they used to have closed
is
circuit?
Is he a fighter?
My brain
how
just
do I Google
quit
this?
Working.
Remember when they used to have the closed
left
circuit
hook.
Stuff?
Left.
Texter says Tommy Morrison?
No.
Tommy left. Tommy Maddox?
Tommy Morrison was the 90s.
Hockey.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of Jerry Cooney. Oh, my God.
Maybe it is Cooney.
We got like seven texters and three callers
Cooney.
Who said Cooney.
Was he left-handed?
Or Jerry Quarry? Is there
No, that's 70s. All right. Maybe it is Cooney.
Yeah, we got all we're getting is Cooney and Corey.
Okay.
I'll find
Not
it.
Not Corey.
I'll find it.
Vepner?
Or Chuck Vepner? The Bayonne bleeder?
No. Is
there
a video of this fight you're talking about?
He was close.
Yeah, Flip Phone Stan said Tex Cobb, but Hadley already threw that out.
No, Tex Cobb. He's an actor.
Although Tex Cobb was close to the same.
Cooney. It was Cooney.
It was Cooney?
Yeah.
You could not knock Tex Cobb down. How many times was Tex Cobb knocked out? Pure knockout in his career.
Solomon will still probably get it
first.
Yeah,
so anyway, Jerry Cooney, 6'6", lefty, cut, steady knocking guys out.
One time.
One out of seven
how
losses.
How about that? Tex Cobb, one time in his whole career got knocked out. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I was just saying, he was the guy. He was the guy until a real fighter said, no, you're not the guy. Go back home.
That was Holmes who ended it.
Yeah.
Closed circuit fight down at the arena. And he just got whooped.
Yeah, his career ended 28-3 and 24 knockouts. He was good.
Yep.
He was good to get to be a contender and then reality set.
Was it Bertuzzo who came to Bomeister's defense the other day too? Or was that Edmondson?
No, that was Edmondson, I believe, and it was
against Nashville.
Right. It was Bertuzzo who came to Dunn's defense yesterday.
Correct. I think, yeah. So, okay.
By the way, thanks to all of our listeners who have
nice.
Not gotten as old as us or their brains haven't. And thank you for helping us out.
Very nice.
We got one more caller who's throwing out Dwayne Bobbitt.
No. Thank you, though. Thank you for we love all of the participating.
All
right.
But I want to tell you
listeners.
Something. When we come back from the break, there was a great event down in Soulard, and I want to give him a great shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Great shout out. Part of kicked off Mardi Gras in a great way. Go ahead.
Well, that's good. We can talk about Soulard right now at the Taste of Soulard, February 23rd and 24th. You can eat and drink your way through the best eateries and watering holes that this historic neighborhood has to offer, hosted by the party pros of Mardi Gras. This self-guided tour of Soulard is one of St. Louis' premier events for foodies. That is you, Rammer. Chow hounds and merrymakers of all types.
Baby.
Experience and exclusive food and drinks available only for pass holders for visiting sdrmardigras.org. And we will see you at Soulard on February 23rd and 24th. That's the plan. That is the plan. We're going to go to break, Rock. You know what? I'm tired of hearing you complain because I was listening to the Ryan Kelly Morning After today, who closed the 7 o'clock hour at 8:17. So we're going to go to break. We'll be back in a bit. It's Hardline.